You're listening to the Permaculture Princess podcast. This is episode number 16. Today, I'm introducing you to someone who inspires me in both my permaculture and spiritual journey. Jeremy Brown is the creator of Brown Bear Wilderness Co. and a fellow Milwaukee permaculture educator, urban gardener, foraging wilderness guide, husband, and father. I met Jeremy when he was hosting a permaculture class at my local library, and I have loved watching his journey ever since. We think very similarly about how taking care of the land and growing our own food is a way of relating to and living out our faith. And while there are many things we could cover in today's interview, I am focusing specifically on Jeremy's knowledge of urban gardening, gardening with a large family, and his dreams for wilderness education. So stick around to meet my friend, Jeremy Brown, and glean from his experience and wisdom. Welcome to the Permaculture Princess podcast. This is a space for lifting up elegant sustainability and abundant practicality. I'm a lover of edible landscaping, plant-based nutrition, home remedies, green smoothies, and all things fitness. I am your host, Andrea Thompson, and as a personal trainer, wellness enthusiast, homesteader, mother, and Christ follower, this podcast acts as a platform for sharing actionable advice for a more abundant landscape and life. Hello, Jeremy. Thanks again for agreeing to do this interview and working around crazy schedules to finally make it happen.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Thanks for having me, Andrea.
So let's just jump right in. I gave a small introduction from my own perspective about who you are, but I would also like to have you introduce yourself and tell me a little background on who you are, what you're passionate about, and what is filling most of your days.
Well, okay, I guess I'll start out by saying when you and I met that class, I think I introduced myself in the same way by just saying, I'm just a guy. I just got interested in permaculture and growing and doing all that kind of stuff some years ago, and never looked back from there. And like you said, got a big old family, and there's no end in sight. I always tell people that I'm we're a farm family trapped in the city here. But yeah, it's just there's a never ending amount of projects around the house, and just raising kids, homeschooling, making, you know, paying the bills and doing all those kinds of things. So there's never any shortage of things to do. That's for sure.
It sounds busy, and with just one toddler and another on the way, I'm already starting to understand how much time changes when you have little ones around.
So definitely,
that is really cool. And I don't think I realized that you guys homeschool as well. So that is very cool.
Yeah, it's a learning process for them and for us, for sure. But I wouldn't have it any other way.
Awesome. So what got you interested in permaculture, the gardening, the growing? What introduced you to permaculture, and how long have you been pursuing more of the regenerative lifestyle?
I will start by saying that I don't call myself a prepper, but I have prepper tendencies. And I think that started me down the rabbit hole years ago, and I couldn't even say now how many years ago it was, but just different things in the world that are going on and stuff. And I was just like, you know, there are examples even in the Bible of people just being prepared for things. And that got me started down the rabbit hole of things. I was working at a farm down in East Troy. One of the workers down there mentioned the term permaculture, and I was like, oh, this sounds kind of cool. And along the lines of what I was already looking into with just sustainability. And, you know, at that point there was the self-sufficiency aspect of it. Which now I know that that's a near impossibility to get to complete self-sufficiency, but, yeah. But just in general, just getting into that. And then there was the side of it where I just knew, like, I always got frustrated seeing people spend so much time and energy and money on like lawns and stuff. And that kind of flipped the switch in me. Like, God, there's gotta be something else. And, just, you know, believing what I believe with, that, you know, God is a creator of all things, and he's given man, you know, the earth as to be stewards of, and just kind of digging down that, that trail a little bit. And that sort of everything just sort of, Back to Eden film. That was one of the first sort of, I don't even think he uses the term permaculture, but no. that sort of got me in the realm of that as well, with just, you know, no more tilling and covering the land and mulching and some of these things, and just fruit, you know, a food that's more nutritious and tastes better, and just that sort of thing. So yeah, I think that kind of got me down that line a little bit.
For sure. I can relate. I remember seeing that and his focus on mulching and covering the land. That was just new.
yeah, for sure.
So small, but, and if you don't mind me asking, what was the farm in East Troy that you were working at?
Roarganics, the Roar family. It was years ago. I used to, my resume is comical. I'll spare you the details, but I've done just about everything you can think of. And I used to drive a semi truck. And, so I delivered to this family who had an organic dairy feed that they shipped out of East Troy, a warehouse. And when I used to pick up from these guys, we used to have conversations about growing. And, you know, even back then I was, you know, thinking about all this stuff, and out of the blue, they called me and said, "Hey, you want to come work for our family?" And it was a great job, because I didn't know if I was going to be taking care of, you know, they had pasture-raised pigs down there that I took care of, and I didn't know if I was going to be doing that or doing concrete or setting up like networks in their offices or you know, one day we chased cows out on his family's place in Oconomowoc. So it was like, it was a great job. I learned a lot, and that's where, you know, like I said, that's where I kind of got reintroduced or introduced specifically to the term permaculture. And so yeah, it was just a great family, great atmosphere and stuff, for sure.
Very cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like those. I like hearing about the local farms or just even places around here that are teaching that or practicing and helping out with that. So that's neat. Speaking of like your experience in the actual maybe agriculture or farming world, how much land do you currently use in your own property design?
Okay. That's a fun one. Okay. So this is urban permaculture. Now I will say this. I like many gardeners, and especially in the realm of permaculture, I, like many people, would someday love to have acreage. And I guess you could say I have acreage now, but it's 0.09 acres that I currently reside on. So it is a small, and you talk about postage stamps, not even a tenth of an acre. And there are two houses on this property. So the amount of land that I have available to me, it's about, I did some quick mental math here, and I think I have about 300 square feet in the front yard, and then about 600 square feet, give or take, in the backyard. And it's not a lot, but we stick it in anywhere we can. I mean, we've got stuff all over the place, and we grow pretty intensively. And which, when you have such a small amount of land, it's easier to pay attention to the, you know, to things and to see how things are going. And so that's kind of nice that way. But yeah, we kind of stick it in everywhere, and it's tight, but yeah, it's not much for sure.
I actually love, I know it probably doesn't seem like a big thing to you, but I love that you said, well, we have this much space in our front yard and our backyard, because I think sometimes people get this mental picture like, oh, I can only put food in this square footage in my backyard. But I love that you're like, no, all of it.
Oh yeah. It's packed. And well, and what's going back to the grass, the lawn issue, very quickly, we've been here now 3 years, just over 3 years we've been in this house, and it's a process, you know, things are, we just chip away at things, you know, all constantly, you know, with the house and with the gardens and yards and everything. But very quickly after we moved in, I removed all of the grass from the backyard, just, you know, basically mulched everything. I mulched everything, and that was the backyard. And then the following year, the entire front yard got mulched, and we did some stone landscaping and stuff like that. So I have zero grass growing on my property, and I have children running around. And so I just made paths in between, you know, the garden beds, and sacrificed a big chunk of garden for a big fort that I've been building for the kids and stuff. Cool. So it's tight, but yeah, no grass is nice. That kind of it's a trade-off that way, and I'm not just growing around the edges or anything. So
very cool. I think that sounds neat. What is it? My husband's always saying guerrilla gardening is like what he wants to do. And every time he sees houses in the city, he's like, we could just plant all over the place.
Oh man. Yeah. If there's so much unused space in the city.
That's for sure. So give, at least for your layout, I think that you are a great example to those who don't have a lot of space, clearly. Mm-hmm. Give me a general layout or lineup of what you plant or harvest and when you plant. Kind of a general design, maybe like from front of the house to back of house or however. Okay. Yeah.
I guess I will do, so I'll start with the front of the house. The front of my house faces north. So the front yard, there's, you know, some shadow immediately next to the front of the house because it's on the north side. But then as it goes down, we get a decent amount of sun. We're on an angle street. It's hard to explain in audio, I guess, but more or less, I've got all perennials in the front yard. And I do, right now, I've got a really good, decent amount of sun. So I do raspberries up there, and we've got gooseberries, and I'm blanking right now.
It's oh my okay. goodness. It's a hard time of year to like be picturing. All
yeah. Things. Yeah. Going through everything. But yeah, we've got different perennials that we've got up there, and the gooseberries, and oh my goodness, I'm trying to think of the one that's related to gooseberry right now. It's just on the tip of my tongue, but anyway, pressure.
I know you gave us some, we got our goji berries from you.
Yeah. I used to have the goji berries up there. I've got cherry bushes, and I've got, just different herbs stuck in everywhere. And then on the very, very front and the very, very north on the corners. And I know that this is going to be like a long time coming. I've got a couple of chestnut trees just because for some reason I sort of have this infatuation with chestnut trees because they're just not around anymore like they used to be. And so I've got those on the very north of the property, and I have this dream like one day they're going to be, you know, these huge chestnut trees that I pass down to my children and, you know, with the property and stuff. So, and then in the back, I've got just a ton more sort of on the northern end of the growing space. I've got apple trees, peach, pear. I've got pawpaws. That's another one that I've had pawpaw once ever, and it was the best fruit I've ever had. That's another one that I'm like, I can't wait the 3, 4, 5, however many years it's going to take to get the fruit from those things. But yeah, oh my goodness, it's so good. It's so, so good.
I have not had any yet. And you were the first person I heard talk about pawpaws at the library. And my husband knew about them, and I was like, well, why didn't you tell me? we have planted, but like you said, it's hard to, we get the seeds and different people have given them, but we aren't sure. We planted last year, and I'm not sure if they're going to come up this year or not, but
yeah. Well, if mine beat yours, then as soon as we get fruit, you guys will be getting some. So then I kind of just do, you know, I've got elderberries and blueberries and strawberries and just tons of, oh, one of my favorite things that it struggled a little bit. I thought it died and it came back is passion fruit.
Really?
It is the Passiflora incarnata. It's, I'm trying to remember what variety, but it's Maypop. That's what it was. It's one of the only
ones. Oh, I have
ones.
Heard that.
Yeah. And it fruits, we've had it fruit one year, and then the winter I thought killed it, but then it came back. And so we're kind of going to wait and see what happens in spring. But that is the flower. If nothing else, for a long time, I was like anti-flower. And because I'm like, if I can't eat it, then I don't want it. But even if I don't get the fruit off this thing, the flower is just so incredible. It's just this crazy tropical purple, looks like something out of a Dr. Seuss book. And so it's super impressive. But
I think it's important to mention that we're impressed by this, especially because we're in Wisconsin.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Totally. Whatever we can make hang on. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then I've got kiwi, cold hardy kiwi on the west side of my house. I've got a trellis that those things are starting to take off. So I'm hoping this year I can get them going up the trellis really well and stuff. But then south of, I've kind of got sort of a half moon of all those perennials on the north and east and west side of my property. And then I've got just sort of the very southernmost dome, or however you want to say, half circle in the yard that is set aside for the majority of our annuals. And because we still, permaculture a lot of people think that it's strictly, and I know you have probably gone over some of this stuff, but some people get so caught up in the perennials, which are amazing. You know, there's so many awesome perennials that you can plant, but annuals definitely have a place in the system. And especially for us, you know, there's nothing like eating that first ripe tomato in the season, or, you know, just my kids go nuts with the cherry tomatoes. They pop them like candy. So it's, so all my annuals are in that. They get the most amount of sun, and that way they're not, all the tall stuff is to the north. So that way the sun aspect isn't being blocked. The general layout.
Yeah. I think that the annuals can be fun. My kid's not that old, but she's two, but she still loved like playing in the garden and helping, you know, seeing what she could plant or what she could play with, or she loved the green beans, eating.
Oh, yeah.
You could find. And she also, speaking of flowers that you can eat, she loved the nasturtiums. So.
Oh yeah. That's impressive actually that she's going, cause it have that kind of peppery, spicy a little bit. Yeah, so
I was surprised. I think it's just because she thought it was cool that she could eat a flower, but
totally. Well, and that's something too. Sometimes as a parent with children, you get a little nervous, like, oh man, I hope my kid doesn't just go around eating every plant, but it's kind of cool to say like, look, you can eat this, you know, almost every single day. My three-year-old girl, Cecilia, would ask if she could have some soil, and she was trying to say sorrel, but can I have a soil, you know? And so they would pick a leaf of sorrel every day, and it's like, you know, that sour green apple kind of flavor a little bit to it. And you know, another cool thing about the annuals is we get this picture in our head for our permaculture layout and this perfect, what we want it to be someday and what we hope it will be someday. But in the meantime, a lot of times there's a lot of empty space, and especially going back to the urban aspect of it with a small property, you got to make the most of everything you have. And for a while I wasn't letting myself just, if I had space, I had in my head like the long-term picture sometimes where it's like, no, that's not going to go there. But I thought like, eventually I got to the point where I'm like, I don't have that much room on this little property. If I have it available this year, I'm just going to stick it in. So, you know, greens, spinach, lettuce, all that stuff, like, you can stick it almost anywhere, and you know, just it's best to make use of that space if you've got it. For now, you can always pull something out if you need to. So
that's a good point. And even like a life lesson, you know, to be able to say, this might not be where I want to end up or where the season, I can use this now, you know,
and I can do what I got now. Yeah.
So what sort of advice might you have for someone who is looking to garden or do permaculture design on a small city suburban plot? What's the first, your first go-to usually when somebody says, oh, I love what you're doing. How do I do that?
The first thing that I will say, and it was, I would like to think I already sort of had this thought in my head, but Michael Judd, I don't know if you're familiar with him or not, but I've heard a couple really good podcasts with him on just some of the different species or whatever. But one of the things that he articulated that I was like, yes, that's exactly what people need to hear, is just do it. Not Nike, just do it, but just do it. Like, just even if it's a little 3x5 garden bed, you know what, if you've got vegetables growing in that much space, that's a lot more than most people do, you know? So don't let the analysis paralysis happen, you know? People plan and plan and plan. So that would probably be my first thing, is if you're thinking about doing it, just do it. You know, the worst that can happen is you lose a couple bucks on some seeds. So what? At least you got a little experience under your belt then, you know? So sort of the flip side of that, especially with a smaller property, smaller urban property, is you do just want to do something, but also planning has a big element to it. If you've got a huge property, there's a little bit more leeway on, you know, your sun, available sun for different species and water and all of these things. If it's spread out a little bit more, or if you can plant a lot of, if I can only plant one apple tree in my urban yard and somebody out in the country can plant 10 apple trees, well, they don't have to worry that much if they lose one or two trees. If I lose one or two trees, then I don't have any apple trees anymore. So planning's good. And I think it's one of the more fun parts. It's one of the more enjoyable parts of the whole permaculture experience. And, you know, just doing a little legwork in the front with where your home is and where the sun is and how the water runs off of your property or your house or different things like that. I think that those would be the two things, you know, plan, but also get something in, do something, get something in the ground, you know, need to pull it out or move things around, then that's okay. That's right. Life's all about, revisions and learning from your mistakes. So
I think that's a really important point and something that Danny and I have experienced a lot here, where there's a lot of land here. And so now we're saying, well, we could do this and this and this. And finally, we just got to the point where we said, all right, let's start. let's start here.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the fact that I'm thinking of the zones in permaculture, but you see your property probably a lot more frequently, or at least,
totally. Yeah. Your whole property is a zone one, essentially. Yeah. So, totally. Yep.
And so you're really able to be really aware of, okay, how is this soil affecting this plant, or how is the sun, or how does this plant affect, you can test all those things and see all those things, where sometimes we can be away from a certain part of our property for 2 days and we're like, what is this? Something has come up or something that you have to kind of revisit and refigure out, like, what totally. Did I plan here?
Totally. And that's, and I cannot even imagine, even though I want a bigger problem, I want those problems, I guess is the way to say it. But you'd be surprised, even with such a small property, there's times where I'm like, oh man, I can't believe we missed the bulk of the harvest on that thing or whatever it is. And it's like, I walk past it every day. How do we miss that? It can happen even on a small property. So it's, definitely something to always be aware of, for sure. Yeah.
It's funny how quickly the natural can take over, where you're like, I've got this all under control. Like, I know exactly what I planted, where I planted, then all of a sudden it's growing. And you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Well, so. And that's just the quick story. That was our grapes this last year. We're like, it was the first time, because I've, when we first moved in, and I put these grapes along the fence, and we had three different grape plants along the fence. And each year I've been basically cutting them down to the ground just because different circumstances, whatever. We didn't have our fence built yet, or different reasons. And this was the first year, finally, I just decided, okay, cool, we're going to let our grapes grow up the fence and trellis them kind of and stuff. And so we're shaping them a little bit and everything. And we got just tons of grapes. We were everybody was excited, because these grapes are, it's an Osceola variety, really good, almost a tropical flavor, and tons of grapes, and they're growing. And I'm like, okay, let's not pick them yet. Let's wait till they're ripe so we can get a whole bunch of them at once. And they're going, and all of a sudden, it was like hot summer sun on them, and they just got just a little bit past, or just a little overripe, maybe. Like, they would have been fine to eat, but covered. I mean, just the whole fence covered with hornets and yellow jackets and wasps and everything else. I'm like, well, that's a lesson learned. Next year, we will be picking the grapes a little sooner than that. Nature got the grapes this year, but that's okay.
Yeah, you're totally right in figuring. Like, I think I was late on my elderberry this year. I think the birds got to it before I did. And I was a little bit bummed about that. But yeah, like you said, like, now I have written, this is when I want to harvest my elderberry, So.
Yeah. And as far as advice goes, again, with the planning, like what you just said, writing it down, it's amazing. Every year there's something that I think, like, I notice something, or, and everything is intensified on a smaller property that way, where if you miss, again, if you like the grapes, it's not like I had rows and rows of grapes somewhere. I just had one fence line of grapes. And so every year there's something that I think, like, oh, I got to remember this for next year. And I think to myself, I'll remember it, don't worry. And I don't write it down, this, whatever it might be, but it's so important to take notes. Mm-hmm. So that we can see, from the year before, those things, for sure.
That's a really good point. No, I really appreciate that. And I know Daniel laugh at you saying that too, because he has started to understand the benefits of that, because I'm the note taker, whereas he's more like, yeah, I'll just remember.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm not a note taker. My wife is the note taker, but yeah. I'm like, yeah, it's fine. Oh, we'll just see what happens.
I get it. So, speaking of your wife, do you find having a large family helpful with the gardening, harvesting? I know you talked about them loving to be out there with you, but as far as like food preservation, that side of things, what do your children think about your urban gardening?
Absolutely. Everybody in the house enjoys and appreciates it at this point. It's funny, Raven is my wife, Raven. And years ago, when I first started, I mean, this was, we just got married, maybe 3 years married, and I wanted chickens. And my wife and my friends and everything, and this is like in a suburb of Milwaukee. And it wasn't like now, you know, you've got like hipsters and everybody's like, yeah, chickens on the property and stuff, which I think is great. I think everybody wanting it now is great. But back then it wasn't popular. And I was like, I want chickens. Why can't we have chickens? You know? And my wife was like, no, we don't live on a farm. We live in the city, you know? And now she's totally flipped. Like whatever I do out there, she's like, yeah, that's cool. Cause sometimes it just takes the crazy guy to just do something for somebody to see the benefit of it sometimes. So everybody definitely enjoys the advantages of having the garden. And my wife is, I always tell people, she is the best cook I know. And I don't say that in a flattering way. I say it 100%. I love my wife's cooking, and she can take simple ingredients and make crazy dishes. And the running joke is that this meal is something you'll never have again, because she just like puts some stuff together and she doesn't know what she's making, you know, but she's just, but anyway, she likes using, being able to use the fresh herbs and the fresh vegetables, and said it already, but you'll never have something that tastes as good as just picked from your garden, just harvested. And so the flavor and the nutrition and stuff that we have, you know, that we're able to benefit from is definitely, everybody loves it. Everybody enjoys it. I will say, having a large, there's drawbacks to having a large family when you're on a small property, because no matter how much you pack in, there are just limitations to how much you can grow. So we've had to decide, you know, sometimes we're, every year I seem to stick in a squash or a pumpkin somewhere anyway, but I think I'm finally coming to terms with the fact that we just don't have room for something that sprawls out so much. I've got trellis plans for the future for some smaller varieties, but you know, so there's certain things that we've had to cut from, you know, we kind of hone in on our favorites and everything, but having seven now people living in the same house together, it's just, you know, it doesn't go as far as you would like it to sometimes, but some tricks and stuff, we're able to make things stretch, you know, so, but all in all, it's great. I mean, everybody likes it and everybody benefits from it for sure.
Well, it sounds like I'll have to try your wife's cooking sometime.
Definitely. Yeah. We'll have you guys over for sure.
Yeah. This is my plan. This is why I do podcasting.
This is, you've got pawpaws coming now and dinner coming now.
And everybody knows. No, that's awesome. I think it's really, my family was always a family that loved cooking as well. And it's just interesting. Like, it's fun being able to take something from your garden and say, all right, what can we do with this? Or especially in learning kind of the foraging side of things. Oh, we can throw this in salads, or we can throw this in an omelet, mm-hmm. or whatever it is. So I think that's exciting.
And one more point to that. You know, there's the old saying, many hands make light work. And I admittedly, and Raven, my wife, yells at me for this sometimes, is that sometimes I'm like, I'm just going to do it myself kind of guy. And I have a plan in my head. And sometimes I have a hard time delegating things out for things to be done. And again, learning process, I'm coming to the point where I know that it's beneficial for me to make use of the help. And I've got very capable young men that I'm raising and young ladies that I'm raising. And so even just something as simple as, hey guys, make sure today you go out and harvest the beans, you know, because otherwise they get too big. Or make sure if you see a zucchini that's longer than your forearm, you know, or whatever it might be, yeah. You know, snag it off or whatever. Having more sets of eyes and more hands out there, definitely. And it's just working together. That's something too that I will say, going back to an earlier question you asked about just the family and sort of what got me into permaculture and stuff, was the idea. And I know sometimes I think my societal views are different than, and I know you can relate to this to some extent too, but like working alongside your family and having dreams of like training, you know, showing my boys how to do carpentry, different things, construction skills, or, you know, gardening, or, you know, one day possibly farming, you know, different things like that. It's just, there's something that is just in me that I can't, I never could shake it. Like the idea of, that's the way it's supposed to be. You know, you're supposed to just work alongside each other and work together and learn things, you know, and teach things. And so that was definitely a motivating factor as well.
I love that. I definitely love that philosophy. So kind of speaking about just even your desire to teach your family, but also to teach others, tell me a little bit about Brown Bear Wilderness Company and kind of your passion dream behind that.
That was something that is something that came into fruition just because I just enjoy creation. I enjoy nature. I enjoy being out in it. And I haven't quite figured out the meshing of some of the more recreational sides of things with like the growing aspect of it yet. But just the desire is to educate and provide opportunities for people just to be able to enjoy nature. So Brown Bear Wilderness actually started with guided backpacking tours, and we go different places here in Wisconsin. We go up to northern Michigan to the Porcupine Mountains, and it's just a time to be able to comfortably as possible bring people along and show them the outdoors and, you know, some of the aspects of creation that sometimes we just miss. You know, we're so busy with life and all of that kind of stuff that just to be able to enjoy that and appreciate it. And I think that there's very much an overlap between something like going out and backpacking and camping and enjoying nature. There's definitely an overlap between that and enjoying time growing things and seeing the fruit of your labor and just seeing the way that God designed these different natural systems and stuff. So it's definitely still developing trying to kind of work my way through that, but it's just the thought process of that, you know. It's just enjoying nature, I guess. Yeah, that's the driving force behind it.
No, I appreciate that. I think it's neat that you say there is a difference between viewing nature and then like the growing side of things. But what I think attracted me so much to permaculture is, and I hear you saying it, is that the natural systems are our example. You know, God made a perfect system.
Absolutely.
And so really that's what every time I kind of looked into permaculture, it was saying like, hey, watch what's going on in the forest, watch what's going on in the ditch, you know, watch what's going on where man isn't messing with it, replicate that.
It's amazing. Humanity, we have this amazing ability to complicate things that don't need to be complicated. You know, I mean, as eloquent and beautiful and detailed, yes, but just the systems of nature that have been put into place, we try and change things up so much that sometimes it's amazing what we miss, you know. And as far as gardening too, I mean, I was just listening to a podcast today, and it was Lee Reich. I don't know if you know that name. Oh, he's a great author. He's got a lot of books. He does a lot about uncommon fruits, I think, is one.
Okay.
The ever curious gardener. Great, 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 great author, and just really good at talking about some of the different fruit species and different things that you can grow. But he was the one being interviewed on this podcast I was listening to, and he's talking about, you know, the different reasons why he doesn't till, you know. And obviously he does more of like a permaculture style mulching. You know, he said he's put an inch of compost on his gardens every year for 30 years. And so it's just, you know, he's definitely got the system down, but his final reason for why he doesn't till, you know, he's talking about some of the other things, you know, some of the scientific things and the different biological, whatever. The last reason I don't till is because then I don't have to till. He's like just talking about, you know, and it's one of those things, like sometimes we're so set on changing things and doing things that we make it harder for ourselves. And this is a system that, you know, there's still work, but boy, we sure make it a lot harder than it has to be.
That is true. I think it's neat that you are able to spend time kind of out and seeing how it's done and then take that home and use it on your property. So yeah. Are there any books or podcasts, websites that have been especially helpful or interesting to you in this journey? And that can be permaculture related or otherwise, whatever kind of stands out to you.
One of the first ones that comes to mind is The Resilient Farm and Homestead. And that is, oh my goodness, I'm the guy's from Vermont and I can't think of his name, but the book is called The Resilient Farm and Homestead. And it is a great, just dense, information dense book that is, it's got a little bit of a how-to element, but not much. It's a lot of it is just talking about different systems and how they can play. And it's majority of it is the growing systems, but then there's animal systems and there's like home systems. And I, being somebody with a lot of construction experience and someone who refuses to pay anybody to do anything around my house, I have to do it all myself. And so for me, just looking at some of those design aspects of that, that book was really great.
It's like there, Ben Falk.
Yep. That's him. And then there's another one that is called Farming the Woods, I believe. Boy, I should have had some authors and everything, but
I can also put them in the show notes too.
Oh yeah. Cool. Yeah. And I can get those to you for sure. But that one was just really awesome with a lot of the, just the wood system. Cause my dream someday, or I believe permaculture is something that can be done anywhere. Obviously we're right smack dab in the middle of a major metropolitan area here. And so it's something that I think that the systems are just, they're completely scalable. So somebody who's in the city and thinks like, well, I have to wait till I get out in the country. Like I said earlier, don't wait, just do it. Just start doing it, because even if you don't intend to keep that property or keep that house or whatever it might be, the experience that you get, and I mean, you reap the benefits all along the way of the produce and everything, but the experience and the knowledge and everything that you get, you know, someday I would like to live out in a wooded area, but you know, someplace where there's room to grow and different things like this. And so that Farming the Woods was great. It was, just mushrooms, you know, shiitake mushrooms on oak logs and mm-hmm. different things like that. So that was a huge one. And then just podcasts in general. When I first started down the permaculture rabbit hole, I couldn't get enough, you know, Permaculture Voices and the Permaculture Podcast. And there's a lot of other ones now. Maritime Gardening is one that I listen to. And there's no way I could think of all of them, but you just start getting down the rabbit hole of different people who homestead and different people who do these things. And regardless of what the subject matter is, I feel like you listen to one of those podcasts and you glean some tidbit out of everything, or even if it just makes you think, oh, I could change this a little bit to be, you know, I could try that and see if it works better. And being flexible, I think, is a huge advantage in just living a life like this, where you're doing permaculture and everything, because it's something then that you see that you can be taught different ways and bend on things and learn from systems that are already in place. And something might work, you know, this exact system might work in this zone, but if you go one zone to the north or the south, it doesn't quite, you know, work. So there's just a lot of tweaking that happens. And so just constantly feeding yourself different information like that, it's a huge benefit to progressing in the system for sure.
I agree. Yeah, I'll also have everything you mentioned in the show notes as well, because I think you're right. Having a learning spirit in this world is really important. You answered so many of my questions, and I think that I'll probably have to have you on again, because we could go in different directions, especially regarding your knowledge about foraging and that sort of thing, which I haven't even tapped into today. So I'm leaving that for another time. but I do want to ask you one final question, and that is just, what does it mean to you to live an abundant life? We recognize that permaculture is a more abundant way of growing, you know, mm-hmm. once it's working the way it's supposed to. But I also, you know, kind of applying that to your life and what that means as from a family perspective or from a growing perspective. Can you just tap into that? What do you think about that?
That's a good question. I'll start it off there. The other day I was having a conversation and the topic of people complaining about the weather came up. I'll get to the point eventually with this, I promise, but people complaining about the weather came up, and the guy I was talking to, he said something that I was flattered by. I took it as a compliment. He said that he recognized in me that different seasons, the changing of the seasons, whatever the weather is, if it's raining or sunny or snowing or whatever, he had noticed like through Facebook or whatever that I'm always positive about it. And I genuinely have come to the point in life where, you know, whatever the weather is, whatever's going on outside, I just try to just enjoy it and appreciate it. I love being outside. I used to, my oldest, he's much older and bigger now, but when he was just a baby, like 1 year old, we used to take walks along, we called it the Lake Forest. It's just a wooded area along Lake Michigan. There were days when, you know, summer days, and it would be drizzling or, you know, raining and stuff like that before we got back to the car. And it was just, we loved it. We didn't care if it was raining. It was just like, you know, we're just in the rain. We're just walking. It's warm enough. We're just enjoying it. And so this guy who's saying like, oh, you know, he recognizes in him, if he sees that it's snowing, he kind of grumbles a little bit and says, oh, I got to get my boots on. I got to go out and shovel or snowblow or whatever. And I had a thought and I told him, I said, you know, there can be that aspect where you think, oh, I got to do this, something that I just don't want to do myself. I don't want to do this, but we look at it and not to over spiritualize things, but I've come to the realization that as I get older, everything's spiritual. So I look at it, I said, you know what, you might have that thought, you know, I got to go out there and do this. But if you look at it as every good thing comes from God and, you know, the falling snow or a fresh blanket of snow and, you know, over the land or on the trees or whatever, nobody can deny that beauty. So that already is like, if you can just recognize that in that moment, you're already way ahead of a lot of other people. But then even beyond that, you know, we're called to be good stewards of everything that God's given us, the land, you know, our money, but also our bodies. And that's something where I think like, it's a blessing for, it was a group of us talking and everybody's like, okay, well, you can be blessed and come shovel my snow then. But I said, it's a blessing, you know, to be able to go outside. You're getting fresh air, you're moving your body, you're getting some exercise, you're moving those muscles, you know, and right. I said, it is, you're out in a beautiful event that doesn't occur all the time. And you're being able to exercise and have fresh air. And I said, if you can look at it that way, instead of grumbling and complaining, you know, then it's so I guess to bring it to your point, what does it mean to live an abundant life? You know, as a believer and somebody who sees the tremendous amount of blessings that God's given me, just being content and finding joy and peace in every aspect. And, you know, and relating to permaculture, it's one of those things that it's like, for God to give me the ability to grow food and to see that miracle of the system that he's put in place and to benefit from it and to be diligent and just to have that life with my family and everything. It's to me taking joy in those small things and recognizing them for the blessings that they are, I think is absolutely the abundant life. Something that there's no way around it. Just seeing how awesome that is just huge for sure.
I really appreciate that. You're right. Perspective is everything when it comes to abundance. And sometimes it takes practicing it. Like you said, sometimes it practice that mental shift. Obviously, I believe that comes with grace and God working through you. But I think that it's true. People see that and can definitely appreciate that understanding. So thank you so much for being willing to share your background and your urban property with us. And I will definitely have all of the things that we talked about in the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime.
What a treat to talk with Jeremy about his practical permaculture lifestyle. I am so inspired by his can-do attitude and his willingness to share information and plants with everyone he meets. There are so many takeaways from his time with us, but I hope more than anything that this interview reminds you that there is abundance available for everyone. No matter where you live or what sort of space you have, there is opportunity for you to put your hands into the soil and grow your own food. For some, it means starting to read some books on gardening or maybe ordering some seeds, finding a local community garden, and for others, it means tearing up the front yard to make space for edible landscaping. No matter what you have or don't have, you all have the ability to get started today. And once we recognize that we are all on this amazing journey of discovery together, we can start to appreciate the learning process and the amazing abundance around us. Thanks again, Jeremy. You and your family are beautiful, and I really would love to sample Raven's amazing cooking someday. Keep up the great work, and for my Permaculture Princess tribe, thanks again for tuning in. And until next time, keep smiling and seeking joy. Thanks for listening to the Permaculture Princess podcast. For show notes or more information, please visit www.permacultureprincess.com. Or find me on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, or Pinterest at Permaculture Princess. I do want to mention again that none of my advice or research is intended to diagnose or treat, and you should always consult your own healthcare team when making changes to your health routine. If you have found any value from this podcast, please subscribe so you can get updates, and also consider leaving a review and a rating, as I am often fueled on words of affirmation and I greatly appreciate your feedback. My hope is that you find blessings throughout your day and that you discover a more abundant landscape and life.